Tonight, Louise Reiner, Beverly Roberts, and Walter Slezak, starring in The Great Impersonation, from Studio One at CBS.
You talk like him and you look like him, but you are not Edward Dominy. You are not my husband at all.
With a moment from The Great Impersonation by E. Phillips Oppenheim, we invite you to Studio One, a full hour of dramatic entertainment from radio's celebrated Playhouse. And now to introduce tonight's great story, here is the director of Studio One, Fletcher Markle.
Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we pick up our swords and capes, our secret plans and smuggled messages, and sharpen our wits to bring you what is unquestionably one of the best romantic melodramas ever written. The Great Impersonation by E. Phillips Oppenheim is an impressive blend of love and perfidious intrigue, and we have an impressive cast to play it for you. First, there's one of Hollywood's very great actresses, twice winner of the Academy Award, who is playing Lady Dominy for us tonight, Miss Louise Reiner. And then there's another young lady who's had a successful whirl at almost everything theatrical, a dozen movies and a score of plays, and who is now about to become a Broadway producer, Miss Beverly Roberts, whom you'll be hearing as Stephanie. And third, but certainly not last or least, one of the most malevolent villains of motion pictures, Mr. Walter Slezak, who is happily cast to type tonight as Alfred Zeman. The Mrs. Reiner and Roberts and Mr. Slezak have lowered their eyes and raised their scripts, and I'm going to remain at the microphone with them to impersonate a young man who may or may not be considered our hero. Thunder, please. And later, inevitably, blood.
Faster, Johann, faster! I must reach the dueling ground before daybreak.
The horses will break under the strain, Your Highness.
A man's life depends on my arrival. Whip the horses! I must prevent that duel.
Wrong of you to come here, Stephanie. You have embarrassed me shamefully before your husband and the gentlemen of our party.
No, it is you who are wrong, Leopold. My husband has tricked you into this duel. He may violate the Kaiser's edict, being Hungarian and a prince. But you are a German officer.
Exactly. And that is why, having given my word of honor, I cannot withdraw. All Berlin would despise me.
Oh, but I love you, Leopold. And you must not risk exile. The Kaiser will never forgive you. And I shall lose you.
Keep your voice low, my dear. They will hear you.
Leopold, listen to me. Look at me.
It is too late, Stephanie.
Oh, no, please. Leopold, you bruise my heart.
I have accepted the challenge.
But you must go no further. Alex is insane, I tell you. I know my husband. His mind is sick. And there is some trick to this duel.
Trick?
You will be disgraced. And that will mean exile. Oh, you must think of me, Leopold. Of us. We are young. There is so much in the future for us.
Baron von Ruggestein.
Only a moment. Stephanie, I insist that you return to your carriage. Johann.
No, you must not. I won't let you. If the Kaiser finds out...
The Baron seems loath to tear himself away from my wife's arms.
Stephanie, stop this. Stop this at once. Johann.
Yes, Excellency.
Escort her Highness to her carriage and drive away at once. Goodbye, Stephanie. I must go.
No. No, Leopold, no. Wait, please. You must not do this. Leopold. Leopold.
Gentlemen, I regret the interruption. I am now at your service.
Prince Eiderstrom, Baron von Ruggestein. I am here as a witness, but I am duty-bound to plead once again that other means be found to settle your differences. We live in the 20th century. It is the year 1906. Dueling no longer is fitting to our culture, and is, in fact, expressly forbidden by His Imperial Majesty, Kaiser Wilhelm.
Come, we know all this.
Baron von Ruggestein is fully bound. And should our Emperor the Kaiser learn of this meeting, it is probable the Baron would pay the price of exile.
Does the Baron wish to forfeit his honor and cry for pardon as would a thieving beggar before a magistrate?
I think not, Prince Eiderstrom. I have the choice of weapons and I have chosen the sword.
I am eager to begin.
Very well. Take your positions, gentlemen. En garde.
Thank you.
Prince Seidestorm died at your sword point, Baron von Rogerstein. And if your family were not influential in my court, you would not at this moment be kneeling before us.
I do not see clemency, Your Imperial Majesty.
That is well, for we are not inclined to clemency. We will not have our subjects disposing of themselves in stupid duels. We have need for every trained nobleman. We know best where lies the honor of Greater Germany. You were carefully prepared for your career to serve the Fatherland. For this purpose, you were sent to England to be educated there. But now you have disgraced your name and your family. You have flaunted our law. We shall make you understand that we rule here. You are banished to German East Africa.
Africa.
And further, we forbid the woman of your heart, Princess Eidestrom, to enter our colony there to join you. Baron von Ragestein, you have failed the plan we destined to be yours in the making of Greater Germany. You leave within the hour. Your audience is finished.
September 22nd, 1913, Darawaga Settlement, German East Africa, etc. Mr. Alfred Zeman, Bank of South Africa, Building Johannesburg. Duplicate to Intelligence Headquarters in Berlin as usual.
Yes, Excellency.
My dear Mr. Zeman, I wish personally to thank you. We are taking the action you suggest on British espionage. During my 7 years here in German East Africa, I have found that our colonial troops displayed loyalty beyond question. And since I personally have trained these troops, come.
Your Excellency.
Dr. Schmitz.
Forgive me, Your Excellency, but our natives have just brought in an exhausted and starving man. For a moment, I thought it was you. It was a terrible shock. He's English, but the resemblance is startling.
I am suspicious of any Englishman. Where is he?
Just outside, Your Excellency, in the hospital tent.
Let's look at him. How did he make his way into the camp?
Well, I could not question him. He has not yet talked rationally.
Where the English are concerned, what might seem only a blunder may be artful calculation. In here?
Yes, Excellency. There. Do we not look upon a likeness of yourself? The nose, mouth, cleft chin. And see, even the color of the hair and beard.
Yes.
Ah, one difference I now detect. The ears, the earlobes. But a minute difference, discernible only to a student of physiognomy.
Dr. Schmitz, I know this man.
You know him?
Yes.
A relative. That explains the resemblance.
No, he is not of my family, although we may have common ancestors. We Germans and the English have little in common, except possibly ancestors. His blundering into our camp may be quite a stroke of luck for me. Ah, you are awake at last. How are you feeling, Sir Edward Dominey?
What did you call me?
By name. You are Edward Dominey.
How'd you know? I say, I've a devil of a thirst.
You shall have something to drink.
What place is this?
Darawaga Settlement, German East Africa.
Excellency.
Bring a glass of hock and seltzer.
Make a gallon of the fizzy stuff. I'm bone dry.
Yes, sir.
Look here. Who are you anyway? I might be looking at a likeness of myself. Only in better health.
I am Major General Baron Leopold von Ragestein, at your service.
How'd you know me by name?
We were schoolboys at about the same period at Eton, and Magdalen afterwards.
Oh, of course, I do remember. We were alike as two peas in a pod. Your name's De Winter, you're Siggy De Winter.
That is my family name. At my uncle's death, when I succeeded to his barony in the States, I took his title.
Well, I say, it's a snug world. But tell me, how did I get all the way down here?
That is of some interest to me, too.
Well, I left Marlinstein 3 weeks ago to do a big trek after lions. I took on some new natives, and they made trouble. Looted the stores one night, started quite a little shooting party. They took my compass when they deserted, and here I am, 100 miles off my course.
And you're in very poor shape physically. What brought you out to Africa, Dominie?
Oh, a search for oblivion, if you want the truth. Things are quite finished with me back home. Not very popular, you know.
When did you leave England?
Years ago. 1903. Only seems a century.
Come to think of it, I heard rumors. Weren't you washed out of British intelligence?
Oh, dishonorably discharged from everything, old boy. Law flourishes. And if you don't mind, I came out to Africa to forget a place called England. Confound you for making me talk about it.
You know, our meeting in the heart of Africa's jungle is indeed remarkable. You really must remain as my guest. I know very well what I'm doing, Dr. Schmidt.
But in his present condition, whiskey is like poison.
An effective poison.
Eh?
To loosen his well-bred English tongue.
As a doctor, it is my duty to
warn you. Your duty as a German comes first. Dominie will swill like a pig and forget his English decorum. I want information in full, detailed, and personal. I've just cabled Berlin, the Kaiser himself, in fact. Brilliant proposal. Dr. Schmidt, I may soon leave this steaming tropical hell. But first, Edward Dominie must drink and talk.
I knew what a sensitive, delicate creature my wife was, von Ragerstein. She's Viennese, you know. We met while I was traveling on the continent. I married her against the family's wishes. She was a bit uncomfortable for a while when we went back to England, learning the language and all that. Well, it was horrible that night she went to pieces.
Your glass is empty. You were saying about your wife.
She cracked up mentally that night from shock. A nightmare for me. She was terribly fond of her brother Kurt and thought I'd murdered him. Well, and on top of everything else.
You were in debt, too, I suppose.
Oh, everything is mortgaged, including my life. Cashiered from the service, wife a mental case. Oh, well, von Ragerstein, you talk for a bit. I'd like to hear about somebody else's miseries. What was behind your exile?
A woman, her husband, and a duel. The Kaiser packed me off to this malarial jungle.
Oh, I'd say we both rather mucked things up.
I have my hopes of happier circumstances.
Oh. Well, that's more than I can say.
Schmidt, look, my cable to Berlin has produced results. My triumphant proposal is triumphantly acclaimed.
Ah, so?
After 7 years, I now have an opportunity to restore myself to the Kaiser's good graces. In a few days, I shall report to Mr. Alfred Zeman, our agent in Johannesburg, for further orders. And then I shall resume my career.
Zeman, eh? I begin to appreciate the plan. You will then proceed to England under his instructions.
Precisely. I shall undertake a great impersonation. The impersonation of Sir Edward Dominie.
Wait, you sound just like him, Excellency.
Quite a brilliant plan, eh, Schmidt?
Quite, Excellency.
And there is this remarkable likeness between us, and Dominie speaks German as well as I speak English. He has not seen an Englishman who knows him for many years. Any school or college friends who I may encounter, I should be able to satisfy. When we were at school together and our resemblance was not as pronounced then as it is now, I stayed at Dominie Hall and I know his relatives. Tonight he has babbled for hours telling me many things that it is well for me to know.
what about his near relatives?
He has none nearer than cousins.
No wife?
Yes. He married a Viennese girl, but fortunately she is insane. Insane, it seems, through a shock for which he was responsible. She might have been the only stumbling block, and she is as though she did not exist. It is a great scheme, perfect.
But suppose the Englishman should return himself?
It will be your duty to help me see that he does not return, Dr. Schmidt.
Oh. I understand, Excellency.
But nothing must happen here in our camp. Dominic will leave here tomorrow. Give him two natives for escort. Instruct them to bring the Englishman to the waterfall of the Blue River. I shall be encamped there, waiting. I dare not rely upon fate and the natives alone. The success of my impersonation depends upon Sir Edward Dominey's keeping his long-awaited rendezvous with death. Good afternoon. Mr. Alfred Zeman.
At your service.
How do you do? My name is Dominey, Sir Edward Dominey.
We have met before.
I don't believe so. I arrived in Johannesburg this morning on a business matter. May I present my credentials, Mr. Zeman?
Come into my private office, if you please. The password.
The tag count.
Your credentials are most interesting.
They must obtain for me a loan of 100,000 pounds.
I'm a businessman, Sir Edward. What collateral do you offer?
A dead Englishman who lies at the bottom of a river in German East Africa.
My dear Baron von Ragerstein, even with your credentials, I find it hard to believe you are not an Englishman.
Von Ragerstein died 2 months ago, Mr. Zeman.
You play this part so well, I'm thankful our diplomatic service did not lose you to the theater years ago.
Thank you, but any man educated in England, as long as I was, could be as convincing.
Now, you know His Majesty's instructions. You understand that you are to take orders from me only?
I do.
Good. To practical matters now. You will require a large sum of money.
Yes. I learned that Dominey's ancestral estate is heavily mortgaged. He contracted debts with every living relative and friend. To regain position and prestige, he must pay up. An impecunious country squire would be of small service to the fatherland. Hey, Zeman?
To be sure. Now, tomorrow morning, Sir Edward, your new business associate, Mr. Alfred Zeman, myself, will deposit to your account in the Bank of South Africa the sum of 100,000 pounds. Then, on Saturday next, you and I shall sail for England and put the money to good use through Sir Edward Dominey's solicitor, Mr. Charles Mangan.
Mr. Mangan.
Morning. Good morning, Morris.
Sir Edward Dominey's arrived in England, Mr. Mangan.
Dominey? Dominey, you say? What's brought that fool spendthrift back after all these years? I don't want to see him, Morris.
But he arrived at 8:30. I was obliged to ask him to wait in your chambers, Mr. Mangan.
I see. He's come for more money, no doubt.
Well, how are you, Mangan?
How do you do? Surely, you're not Edward Dominey.
Why not, Mr. Mangan?
Why, you have... It's some years since we met personally, but
we last met in April, 1902, just before I left England, 11 years ago.
I can't believe it. By Jove, Sir Edward, you look uncommonly well.
Thank you. And now that I'm here at long last, Mangan, I'd like a full listing of the mortgages in Dominey Hall and my numerous creditors.
Dominey, let's get this straight. You can't borrow another penny.
Calm yourself. I haven't come for that. As a matter of fact, I intend to pay off the mortgages and settle my personal indebtedness.
What?
I've had some luck lately, Mangan. I've made a good deal of money in Africa.
You've made money? Great Scott. Oh, forgive me, Sir Edward, but... Great Scott, why, you're the first Dominey who's ever earned a penny.
At this moment, I have a credit balance at the Bank of South Africa of something over 100,000 pounds. You may draw upon it immediately.
100,000? I say, you are Edward Dominey.
We must get reacquainted, Mangan. It's been a long time. Will you have lunch with me at the Carlton Grill Room? Shall we say 1 o'clock?
An
Another sherry, Sir Edward?
No, thank you.
Oh. You know, your experiences are almost beyond belief.
The impossible does frequently happen. But enough of my adventures. Suppose you bring me up to date now on news of London society.
With pleasure. I presume you intend to call upon your relatives here.
Oh, would they be delighted to see me?
Oh, well, my dear fellow, you were in a state of chronic impecuniosity during your last residence and borrowed quite...
Borrowed myself right out of future welcome, huh? Right, I'm sure a relative of mine had crossed the street to see me again.
Oh, that won't apply to the Duchess of Worcester, surely. She was always your champion, you remember.
Yes, the Duchess was always gracious. Hmm. But even she got fed up before I left, so I doubt if I shall trouble her.
Well, you may not have a choice in the matter. She entered the dining room a few moments ago.
Oh? Which one?
The lady wearing the gray plumed hat. That's your cousin.
Oh, really? Is that Valerie? She seems to have changed.
Well, you've been away 11 years.
I say, she's spotted me. Is it you, Mangan? At any rate, she's heading this way.
How do you do, Mr. Mangan? I hope you're looking after my Leicestershire tenants.
We shall make a report to you in due course. Your Grace, don't you remember your cousin?
Cousin?
He's only just returned to England. Sir Edward Dominey.
Edward Dominey?
It's been such a long time, Valerie.
Edward, really? But it doesn't seem possible. You've changed so. When did we last meet?
Fair enough challenge, Sir Edward.
Well, I should consider our last meeting somewhat personal. It was at Worcester Hall, I believe.
Sir Edward, what an unexpected pleasure.
Ah, Zaman, delighted to see you. May I present my cousin, Her Grace the Duchess of Worcester, and my legal advisor, Mr. Mangan. This is my business associate, Mr. Alfred Zaman.
How do you do? You met Sir Edward in Africa, Mr. Zaman?
Several years ago, Your Grace.
I've been remarking on his change.
In what way?
Oh, he seems stronger, more assured somehow. I dare say it's a chemical change due to extended residence in the tropics.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Waiter, another chair, please.
Yes, sir. Right away, sir.
Sir Edward, I do believe that young lady at the corner table over there wishes to get your attention.
Which lady?
Very handsome one. I know her. It's the famous Hungarian beauty, you know, Princess Idostrom. I say she's coming over here.
Do forgive my coming over this way, Your Grace, but this gentleman seems to have grown nearsighted with the years. Leopold, how dare you come to London and not let me know?
Leopold, you mistake my identity, Your Highness.
Oh, mistake? You deny to me that you are Leopold von Ragerstein?
My name is Edward Dominey. I am the Duchess' cousin.
You are not Leopold? Your Grace, he is your cousin, so it would appear, my dear. Oh, but it's fantastic, the resemblance. I'm sorry. Forgive my intrusion. Oh, Leopold, Sir Edward.
Oh, Princess Idostrom, how do you do?
I've waited here for a moment to speak to you alone. Oh, it was so embarrassing in the dining room.
Not at all. People are forever mistaking strangers for someone they know.
Oh, Leopold, do not provoke me this way. I know it is you. Every movement, every gesture. And your face is bright in my memory.
I regret not being the gentleman you think me, Your Highness.
Leopold, I am not deceived. You have some reason for hiding your identity. But I must see you. Tonight, 9 o'clock at the German embassy. There is a reception.
Princess Idostrom, I'm sorry. I am not Leopold von whatever, and I have a previous engagement this evening.
It is all very intriguing, Mr. Zeman. But I have no interest in your fantastic German schemes.
I came here to tell you, Your Highness, that von Ragerstein's masquerade as Dominey will terminate in the fall at the very latest. The war, when it comes, will not last long, Princess. Our timetable is perfected.
Oh, you stupid little man, prattling of world conquest. I tell you, these things do not interest me. I must see Leopold. It has been so many years.
Please, I ask for discretion. I must have your promise. Germany's future is at stake.
Mr. Zeman, my separation from Leopold has been long and cruel. Now this ridiculous impersonation. I warn you, even if Leopold leaves London, I shall find him wherever he is and go to him.
You'll have to see Princess Eiderstrom, Baron. I reasoned with her as best as I could, but she insists.
I'm sorry, Seaman. My cousin, the Duchess of Worcester, has graciously agreed to accompany me to Dominey Hall tomorrow. Stephanie, dare not follow me there. I shan't return to London for quite some time.
Oh, so the Duchess goes with you. That's a stroke of luck.
I think she's still suspicious. But what are my further instructions, Seaman?
You understand your usefulness to us depends upon establishing and maintaining your position as an English gentleman.
Of course. What precisely is my function?
Oh, this is a long-range plan. A magnificent gamble. For the present, your orders are to ingratiate yourself as Dominie and acquire a taste for the country life of an English baronet.
Then my orders are easily carried out.
As you haven't been accepted at Dominie Hall, you understand your position with regard to Dominie's domestic affairs?
I believe Dominie told me enough, most of it.
All that you need to know? Tomorrow you must go to Dominey Hall and face the crucial test.
Well, there were one or two personal intimacies which lay beyond the limit of questioning.
It was not your duty to cater to someone's personal refinements. You should have dragged all the information from his throat.
His reticence obviously concerned his, relationship with Lady Dominey. I believe I am blamed for the death of her brother, a belief which brought upon her a mental illness. I showed you her picture, Zaman. She's rather delicately beautiful, not at all dangerous-looking.
Yeah. Fortunately, she's hopelessly insane.
And if she were not?
Then, my friend, your great impersonation would be kaput.
Wired ahead to Dominey Hall to say we're coming?
I decided it'd be wiser not to, Valerie.
Edward, you don't. Do you want to shock Rosalinda into a mental setback?
I doubt if my homecoming will make that much difference to her. After all, it's been 11 years.
Oh, I don't know where to begin to understand you. Truthfully, why have you returned to England, and why can't you leave the past alone?
Perhaps it refuses to leave me alone until I try to undo the harm I've done my wife.
Remorse in you, Edward? Oh, I don't believe it. Incidentally, if you expect to reach your ancestral home, you're making the wrong turn.
Oh, quite so. 10 years have certainly brought changes. The old retaining wall is down, I see.
That wall's been down, to my knowledge, at least 20 years.
Oh, really? That shows how unconcerned I was about this place. Dominey Hall will find me a changed master.
We certainly agree on that. Now, you're to wait out here. It's only decent to prepare Rosalinda for the shock of seeing you again. Tell Lady Dominey I've come to visit Annie.
Yes, Your Grace. Her ladyship's having tea with Dr. Harrison, Your Grace.
We have company, Annie.
Hello, Rosalinda. Look what an ill wind blew down from London.
Valerie! What an unexpected pleasure. Another cup, Annie.
Yes.
Do come in.
Ah, hello there.
Oh, I'm pleased to see you again, Dr. Harrison.
Pleasure is mine, Your Grace.
Rosalinda, you're looking simply splendid.
Thanks to Dr. Harrison's magic.
Oh, not at all.
He's been wonderful to me. I walk through the gardens, I play the piano, and I love it. If you can believe it, Valerie.
My dear child, you'll find me quite ready to believe anything.
I do hope you've come to stay a while.
Oh, at least for the night.
Yes, I'm all well again, Dr. Harrison. Friends are coming to visit me.
Rosalinda, I've some surprising news. Please, my dear, try not to be too shocked.
Unpleasant news, is it?
Well, perhaps I should tell you first, Dr. Harrison.
Tell me, Valerie, you must. Is it news of court?
No, not news of your brother.
And tell me, please, don't keep me waiting.
Edward's returned. He's here.
Edward?
Yes,
gracious.
Edward is allowed to go about freely. But he killed my brother.
Rosalinda, my dear, please.
And he still walks about as a free man.
Edward's come to help you, Rosalinda. He's waiting outside in my
car. For 11 years, I had no news of court. Edward fought with him.
and murdered him.
Rosalinda, you must not let go this way.
Come, come, Lady Domine.
There's no doubt about what happened, and you know it, Dr. Harrison.
We've always faced the possibility of Sir Edward's return.
He shall not come into this house.
You mustn't feel this way, Lady Domine.
Dear, I...
Tell him to go away, Dr. Harrison. Tell him never to dare to return.
My dear child, you're too well to yield to these...
Tell him to go away, I say, or I will kill him.
From Studio One, radio's celebrated playhouse of dramatic entertainment, you're hearing Louise Reiner, Beverly Roberts, and Walter Slezak with Fletcher Markle in the latter's production of The Great Impersonation, a version for listening by Addie Richton and Lynn Stone of the E. Phillips Oppenheim novel. Our story will resume after the customary pause for station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. From Studio One, we continue tonight's full-hour dramatic entertainment. But first, a reminder that next week and thereafter, Studio One will be heard one half-hour later. And now, Louise Reiner, Beverly Roberts, and Walt Slezak in Fletcher Markle's production of The Great Impersonation.
You must listen to me seriously, Sir Edward. It was most fortunate that Her Grace had taken Lady Domine up to her room before you came into the house. You must remember that in her present state of mind, Lady Domine is quite capable of taking your life.
I refuse to believe that.
And I refuse to give her the opportunity to express her obsession against you. I say, would you come here to the light, Sir Edward?
You find me changed, Dr. Harrison?
One's appearance may change over the course of 10 years, but one's character... Sir Edward... Remove your waistcoat and your shirt.
I suppose you wish to identify the chest wound my brother-in-law Kurt inflicted the night we fought.
My surgery saved your life that night. I alone know the scar it would leave on your chest.
Well, it's somewhat altered, unfortunately, as you may see for yourself.
Domine, what is this?
The result of a hunting accident, Dr. Harrison.
How'd you ever survive such a mauling?
Luck. But I'm afraid it's obliterated the record of your fine surgery.
Perhaps that accounts for the change in you. Perhaps you found courage in the jungle. I confess I'd consider that a miracle, if I believed in miracles.
Edward, you are quite impossible. Dr. Harrison, can't you reason with this headstrong fellow?
Eventually, perhaps Lady Domine will accept your return as a matter of course, Sir Edward. In the meantime, it would be best for you to take up residence at the inn in the village.
I see no reason to change my plans, Doctor.
Edward, why are you determined to disregard everyone's advice? Why must you willfully risk your life here tonight?
Valerie, the time has come to prove something to myself.
You are certainly stubborn. Where do you plan to sleep?
The Oak Rooms, my suite, I believe.
You'll be next to Rosalinda's suite, you fool. That sleeping draught Dr. Harrison gave her won't last. You'll be in danger when she awakens. Don't you realize how much she hates you?
My dear cousin, you've a macabre turn of mind. That sounds like a storm blowing up. Well, good night to you. Who's there? A candle in my face. Who?
Edward. You shouldn't have come back.
Rosalinda.
Edward.
You...
I cannot sleep. Since you've been in the house, I've been walking around in my room. I had to come here and speak to you. When I lie with my eyes closed, I see you as I saw you last. reeling home wildly drunk, and Court's blood wet on your hands. Edward, can you realize that it takes all my strength to try not to kill you somehow?
Rosalinda, my dear, I didn't take your brother's life.
Oh, Edward! Where is he then? Where did Court disappear to 11 years ago? Why did he not come back if you did not kill him? You quarreled and you fought.
Oh, no. How can you believe this? And how can you believe of yourself that you could ever take my life? Oh, Rosalinda.
Darling, I'm so confused. Let me go back to Vienna. Let me go home to be with my family for a while.
Of course.
Thank you. Please, take me back to my room now. Please.
I must confess, I'm relieved to see you downstairs, alive and healthy this morning, Sir Edward. I fear the Duchess and I frightened you unduly last evening.
You did indeed, Dr. Harrison. All Lady Dominey needs is a change, a visit to her family in Vienna. And if you think treatment is necessary, can you make an arrangement with a physician you would recommend in Vienna?
There are many good men in Vienna.
My wife's health and happiness are my sole interests. I think it's best for her to leave at once.
I'll be happy to be of service, Sir Edward. But do you want such a long separation from your wife?
Whatever is best for her is best for me.
Edward, it is all arranged. I'm leaving tomorrow.
Yes, darling. You should have gone long before this.
And when I return, I will be the healthiest girl in the world. It seems so strange talking with you after so many years.
Have I changed so much?
Oh, so much. But before I go, please, Edward, tell me, please, what did happen to Court? Why did you kill him?
Rosalinda, you've no real memory of what happened between your brother and me. Well, let's not worry about that now. You'll have the best possible time in Vienna with your family.
I know what you're really thinking. You're thinking I'll be out of the way. You're not interested in my welfare.
Why, what do you mean?
I suspected it before. But now I know. Now that I see you here by daylight and hear you speak. Now I understand perfectly why I couldn't kill you. You're very like him. But you're not Edward Dominey. You're not my husband at all.
Would be interested to know that Lady Dominey is now en route to Vienna.
Splendid, splendid. Nicely done.
I am quite free now to assume duties that extend beyond the enjoyment of a country squire's life.
You have been very clever. The Kaiser is pleased. By the way, I understand that the Princess Ida Ström was given an audience with the Kaiser last week.
Oh, really? On what subject?
I haven't found out as yet. But the big news is this. When war is declared, you will become our unofficial ambassador here, the nerve center of our entire espionage.
Good evening, Sir Edward. I do hope you'll forgive this unconventional visit to Dominey Hall.
Yes, it is rather unconventional, Stephanie, and most indiscreet. I didn't know you had returned to England. May I ask your purpose in coming here?
I have this letter for you, Leopold. Special orders, which you may act upon at once. Here you are.
Thank you.
But you do not need to read it now. I know its contents by heart. It is from Kaiser Wilhelm himself. It says, "We look with favor upon your future marriage to the Princess Stephanie of Eiderstrom. Your union shall be blessed by the church and approved by my court. It was signed in my presence by the Emperor." Oh, Leopold, we are together at last. There is nothing to stand between us now.
Think, Stephanie, think. I am as I have been addressed here and as I must remain yet for months to come. Edward Dominey, an Englishman and the owner of this house, the husband of Lady Dominey.
And where is your reputed wife?
In Vienna with her family. She has practically recovered and she cannot remain there much longer.
You must insist that she does remain there.
I ask you to consider the suspicions that would be excited by such a course. Stephanie, how can I marry you and fulfill my role here for Germany?
And how can you be so logical and restrained with me, Leopold? You sit there like the cold Englishman whose place you are taking. You whose tears have fallen before now on my hand. Whose lips have...
Stephanie, Leopold is dead until the coming of certain great events may bring him to life again.
But if you're clever enough to lead another man's life, Leopold, you surely can be resourceful enough to include me. We have the Kaiser's permission. You can find a way. We could be married secretly.
Well, Stephanie, I must have time to think. I must consider my mission here above everything. I plead only for delay.
The Leopold I knew would never plead for anything. I wonder sometimes if you haven't left him in Africa and come to England in his likeness.
Think that, please, for just a little while longer.
I have been thinking it for some time now. And there is one way to know for sure. Now, please, I'm ready to leave. Will you escort me to my car, Sir Edward?
A German should know how to obey. As long as you had the Kaiser's consent, you could have married the princess secretly. It might have saved much trouble.
I take official orders from you, Zeman, but I'll have no further interference in my personal life.
You Junkers know very well how to be arrogant, von Ragerstein. What do you hear from Lady Dominey?
Why, the reports on her health seem to be quite encouraging. Why do you suddenly introduce the subject of Lady Dominey?
I have reason to believe that your interest in her extends beyond the needs of your impersonation and may possibly be dividing your loyalties. Let me hold the match to your cigar, my friend.
Thank you.
Never noticed your hand so unsteady before.
Can it be that you are suspicious of me, Zeman?
In our unpleasant business, we must be suspicious even of ourselves.
Yes, Stevens?
A gentleman is calling, Sir Edward. Mr. Ludwig Müller of German East Africa.
Oh? I don't believe I know him, Stevens.
Mr. Müller states his visit is of a personal rather than business nature. Sir
Ludwig
Edward.
Müller? Never heard of him. He's not from Johannesburg.
Show him, Stevens. Your suspicions regarding my interest in Lady Dominey are quite ridiculous, Zeman. I've seen her only twice.
My dear friend, your talk and acting won't convince me. You are no longer in love with the princess.
Mr. Müller, Sir Edward.
Sir Edward?
How do you do? Have we met previously?
I believe not, Sir Edward. I am a cousin of Dr. Carl Schmidt.
Of course. How is my friend Schmidt?
In excellent health. He gave me a letter of personal introduction to you.
Thank you. I should like to present Mr. Alfred Zeman, my business associate.
Oh, we are old friends, I think. I'm delighted to meet you again, Johann Wolf.
You are quite mistaken, sir. I am Ludwig Müller.
Don't take me for an imbecile. Your face is clean shaven. The color of your hair is now red, but I know you to be Johann Wolf. It's dangerous for you to be in England. What is your mission?
You confuse my identity, sir. I am Ludwig Müller. Dr. Schmidt sent me to advise Sir Edward that a certain Englishman is not dead.
What do you say?
I beg your pardon.
There are liable reports that the Englishman made his way to the coast. There's danger of his unexpected return here, which would be disastrous.
Well, that's ridiculous. I know what happened to that Englishman. He's lying at the bottom of the Blue River. Surprising of you to come all the way from Africa to report a rumor.
Now tell us your real purpose, Mr. Johann Wolf.
I've given all my information. I'm sorry you mistake me for another man.
Well, there's no point in arguing this now. It's much too late. Unless you've made other arrangements, Mr. Müller, may I offer you the hospitality of my home?
Thank you. I should be happy to accept.
Your work is counter-espionage, Johann Wolf. And Schmidt had some other purpose in sending you to England. You're here to make trouble. Evidently, I no longer have the complete trust of Berlin. This must be settled between us. You will accompany me to Berlin tomorrow, Johann Wolf.
Sir Edward,
I'm glad you're still awake.
What is it, Saban?
He's gone. Johann Wolf disappeared.
You mean Ludwig Müller disappeared?
He's Wolf, all right. I went to his room. I found his bed undisturbed. He's gone.
But where? How would he leave? It's quite impossible.
It is not impossible. I searched the house. We're in trouble, my friend. Something has gone wrong.
What? What possible mischief?
Wait. I hear a car. Perhaps he's not yet gone.
Huh. Sounds as if the car were arriving, not leaving.
Then they've sent someone for him. It was all planned. Come with me at once. Hurry.
Your man is extraordinarily excited.
Oh, you're a fool. Somebody's afraid the impersonation will be exposed. Wolf was sent here to murder you or me, or possibly both of us. I know how they operate.
Oh, but that's illogical. If that were his purpose, why would he disappear?
Because I've exposed him. Who's that? Stop. I have a pistol.
Oh, look here, it's only Stevens.
I was just coming to your room, Sir Edward.
What happened to Ludwig Müller? When did he leave?
Leave, sir? To my knowledge, the gentleman is asleep.
No, he's not in his room. I was there.
Oh, then perhaps he was restless and wanted to walk about the grounds.
Ridiculous.
Sir Edward, I came to tell you that Lady Dominey's come home.
Lady Dominey?
I'm returning to London at once, Sir Edward. I trust it will not disappoint Lady Dominey not to see you, but I must ask you to leave with me.
Don't stop, please.
Edward, you're back from London.
Yes. You play beautifully. Chopin.
Yes. I didn't know you'd be coming back to Dominey Hall. I thought...
I'm sorry I had to leave so abruptly the other night when you'd only just arrived. You look wonderfully well, Rosalinda.
Were you angry with me for coming home? I had to come back. There was so much talk of war in Vienna.
It's more than talk, my dear. Archduke Ferdinand and his wife were assassinated in Sarajevo today.
Oh, no.
I'm afraid this is the beginning. I came back here to join my regiment.
Will England be involved, too?
It seems inevitable. We're mobilizing.
Oh, Edward.
But don't worry now.
Darling... Darling, were you displeased with me for returning unannounced?
You mean when I left without seeing you? Of course not, Rosalinda. Zeman was here. We had to go to London. Some stupid business matter came up.
Business that took you away in the middle of the night?
Yes. Well,
tell me the truth, Edward. When you came back, I was attracted to you because you seemed somehow different, new, someone else. I've never known before what it meant to be jealous. I hated myself. In Vienna, the servants mentioned Princess Eiderstrom. I saw her there. She's the most beautiful, sophisticated woman. I know the princess was here to visit you, Edward. Oh, I'm seeing all these things I did not want to see.
I understand, my dear.
You are my husband, Edward. I never really distrusted you, those terrible years of illness... But now I know for sure. I must apologize for so many stupidities.
My dear child.
I'm not a child anymore. I'm your wife. And I come home realizing I must take a wife's place. I've counted too many wasted years. I believe you now. I believe you did not kill my brother.
Oh, there's so much to tell you, Rosalinda. And I wish we might talk now. But I shall only be here for a few hours. I must return to London this afternoon.
I see. Forgive me for making this scene. It is somehow hard for me to accept reality. I realize there was nothing at all for me to come home to.
Has it really been 3 weeks since you came returned to England, Lady Dominey?
Yes, 3 weeks.
Oh, this talk of war is so depressing, so shocking. The friendship between England and Germany,
I still refuse to believe we will have war. Sir Edward arrived yet?
Is he coming here today?
So we had arranged.
Oh, I'm quite ignorant about my husband's whereabouts these days. He's taking up permanent residence in London.
Unavoidable, I suppose. These past few weeks have played havoc with the stock market. But I was expecting to meet Sir Edward here.
Then I'm sure he will be here. Perhaps this is he now.
Hello there. I'm sorry to be late, Damon. How are you, Rosalinda?
I'm well, thank you. You're in uniform, Edward.
Yes.
I must acknowledge that as depressing as the sight of a uniform is to me, yours is becoming, Sir Edward.
Will you be staying?
I'm afraid that depends on my business with Mr. Zaman.
Oh. Then, of course, you must excuse me.
I shall look forward to seeing you again, Lady Dominie.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Yes, she has exquisite beauty, my friend. Your residence in London is greater proof of your duty to Germany than your seeming sacrifice in refusing to marry the princess.
Zaman, what's happened to Stephanie all this while?
I understand the princess has been away, but she returned to England yesterday.
Oh, indeed? If there's war, she'll be interned.
Of greater importance, my friend, is the news that I have finally located the whereabouts of Johann Wolff. He's being held in prison here.
Prison? On what charge?
There is no charge against him.
You can't hold a man in an English prison without a trial and conviction.
He's detained in a military prison. Wolff was a marked man with the British Secret Service. They were waiting for him.
Oh, that's somebody's stupid blunder. He was here, and if the British Secret Service associate me with Johann Wolff, we'll be in trouble, Zaman.
I can't understand it. I cabled Dr. Schmidt for information on the nature of Wolff's mission here, but evidently Schmidt has been transferred.
Zaman, to be quite practical, is it discreet for us to meet so often?
This is my final visit to Dominy Hall. Tonight I leave England.
Oh, well, you go.
Ireland. I have some papers for you, my friend. This morning our ambassador left for Berlin. The time has come for you to take over.
Ah, you've brought my orders.
Yes. And they are of such vital importance, I feel reluctant to let the documents out of my hands. Baron, in this book, you have the secret records of our German embassy. You know how important it is?
Of course.
Beg pardon, Sir Edward.
Yes, Stevens?
The Princess Ida Strom asks to be announced. A gentleman is with her.
You must ask the princess to wait. Mr. Zaman and I have business to conclude.
But I do not like to be kept waiting, Sir Edward.
I beg your pardon.
I have brought someone with me, I'm sure you remember. Dr. Carl Schmidt from German East Africa.
Oh, why, of course. Dr. Schmidt, it's good to see you again. Are you well?
I am well, Sir Edward.
May I present Mr. Zaman?
I'm delighted to see you, Dr. Schmidt. I have recently sent you a cablegram inquiring about a gentleman you know as Ludwig Müller.
Are you leaving us, Sir Edward?
Oh, not at all. I was about to ring for Stevens.
On my advice, Müller was sent here to identify Sir Edward Dominie. I told him how this identification was possible.
What do you mean, Dr. Schmidt?
By the earlobes.
Who is he, Dr. Schmidt? Name him. Identify him.
The earlobes. Yes, you are the Englishman, as I suspected. Müller had orders to kill this man.
Are you telling me this is not Baron von Ragerstein?
What have you done with Leopold?
I suggest that he killed Leopold.
Oh, you're out of your mind, Dr. Schmidt. You, of all people, know the circumstances under which I assumed this impersonation.
You are a liar, but you cannot lie to me. There was one difference. The earlobes. I am a student of physiognomy. I cannot be deceived.
Tell me what happened to Leopold.
Dr. Schmidt, will you swear to me on your life that this man is not the Baron?
Point your revolver to my head and I still swear he is not.
He is an imposter. I felt it from the very first.
Why, you...
Look out! Look out!
I have him, sir.
And I'll keep this revolver, Zaman. Thank you, Stevens.
I told you, this man is the Englishman. He has my embassy papers.
Quite so. Stevens will deliver them to our secret service.
Oh, you killed Leopold. You murderer.
Correct. It was his life or mine. Don't move, Dr. Schmidt. You and Zaman are under arrest.
You can't arrest us.
To the contrary. Von Ragerstein was aware that I was once a member of the secret service in England. He believed I'd been washed out. I wanted him to believe that. I went to his camp deliberately. I knew Von Ragerstein would think of getting rid of me to carry out an impersonation. And when he began to question me closely as to my personal life, I had proof. When we met at the Blue River that fateful night, the Baron didn't find me as drunk as he hoped. We fought fairly and he lost.
Leopold.
You know the rest, Mr. Zaman? I am and always have been Sir Edward Dominey.
I know you are Edward. Only I did not dare believe it when you first came back.
Rosalinda, why not?
Mostly, I think, because I could not bear the thought that you had killed my brother. So when you returned after all those years, I simply had to think of you as another man.
I didn't kill Kurt, my darling. Why couldn't you believe me years ago and trust me?
Because he did disappear. There was no world. But now in Vienna, I had to remember so many things about Kurt. Such unpleasant things, horrible. I hadn't ever wanted to face them. His gambling, his wild extravagance that nearly brought you to ruin, financially.
Yes, I know.
And then I suppose I always felt there was a touch of madness in Kurt. I began to grow horribly afraid there. There might be the same unbalance in me.
In you? Oh, no. My darling, there's nothing in you that remotely resembles Kurt. And I have a surprise.
What?
I'm free now to tell you what's happened to him. Kurt is in Australia.
Alive! Kurt! How do you know? Are you quite sure?
Oh, I am quite sure. 11 years ago, he was ordered to leave England because he discovered I was in the Secret Service. He threatened to sell the information to Germany, and I had no alternative but to place him in custody.
But why then did he never write?
He has written, but the letters were retained at headquarters. They've kept them for you, and I can get them for you now. I'm afraid Kurt will never be permitted to return, but you'll be free to visit him if you like.
And to leave you? Is that what you want?
Oh, how can you ask such a foolish question?
Well, you don't act like a husband. Oh, Edward, dear darling, it's been so long. I want a place in your life again.
My dearest, you've never lost your place in my life. The hardest part of my great impersonation, believe me, was pretending that I didn't love you.
From Studio One at CBS, you have just heard Louise Renner, Beverly Roberts, and Walter Slezak, starring in Fletcher Markle's production of The Great Impersonation by E. Phillips Oppenheim. Another full-hour dramatic entertainment from radio's celebrated Playhouse. Tonight's script was prepared by Addie Richton and Lynn Stone, and the original music was composed and conducted by Alexander Semler. Now again, Mr. Markle.
May a producer introduce the principals in our cast tonight. In the foreground,
Lady Dominey.
Was played, of course, by Miss Reiner.
Stephanie.
Was played by Miss Roberts.
Alfred Seaman.
Was played by Mr. Slezak.
Dr. Schmidt.
Was Everett Sloan.
Mr. Megan.
Was Robert Dryden.
Dr. Harrison.
Was Hedley Rennie.
The Duchess of Worcester.
Was played by Miriam Wolfe. And actively assisting in the supporting cast were Gregory Morton, Guy Spall, Jack Lloyd, Louis Quinn, Vivi Janis, and John Merlin. Sir Edward Dominey and the Baron von Ragerstein were played by your producer. Next week, from Studio One, one of the really great American portraits of husbands and wives, the story of Sam and Fran Dodsworth, from the very distinguished novel by Sinclair Lewis. As Midwesterners on a European spree, and as human beings involved in a bewildering marriage, the Dodsworths are worthy of returning attention. And we look forward most warmly to the appearance of next week's visiting star, a very great actor who originally created the role of Sam Dodsworth for the stage and the screen, Mr. Walter Houston. May I again remind you that beginning next Tuesday, Studio One will be heard 1 half-hour later, from 10 to 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, over most of these stations. We hope you'll be with us. And now until next week,
Until Sinclair Lewis is Dodsworth with Mr. Walter Houston, this is Fletcher Markle with a good night and thank you from all of us in Studio One. This is Lee Vines, and this is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.